Okay, good evening. And welcome to the regularly scheduled May 17th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed the superintendent's evaluation. We conferred with our negotiators regarding real property concerns. We conferred with our labor negotiators regarding the status of negotiations with CSEA and SLCTA. We need to report out that we had a student personnel matter, a stipulated expulsion hearing, and that we accepted the recommendation on a 7-0 vote.
No, that is actually a vote you'll take now in open session, unless you're talking about the litigation matter.
No. The litigation matter.
The expulsion, you're going to take a motion and second here in open session.
Okay. So I would like to entertain a motion on
I'll make a motion to accept the stipulated expulsion.
Second.
So I have a motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Millar. Is this a roll call, Mrs. Holmes, or just... Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So that is seven ayes, one absent.
Six
ayes, one absent. And then we discussed an issue of anticipated litigation and gave direction to staff. Is that sufficient information? Okay, thank you. It's okay. Do we have consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay. 4.02 we've taken care of. We have two sets of minutes to approve, the minutes of May 3rd, 2016.
I'll make the motion to approve the minutes of May 3rd.
I'll second that.
So I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Questenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 7-0. And again, on the minutes of 5-4.
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes of May 4th.
I'll second.
So I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. So we have six ayes, one abstention by Mr. Unger. Student representatives to the board. Let's just go backwards this time. We'll start with Nick Helms and Seth W. from Morobay High School.
Hello, nice to see you all again. I've been absent due to sickness for the past couple of weeks, and because of that, I brought our ASB president in, Seth Wilkie, to fill you guys in.
Hi, thank you for having me today. I'm just going to talk about the past activities I've been doing while Nick was absent. Our ASB class has been very busy lately. We've been planning many events, including we're going to have a May Madness, kind of like March Madness, but in May, 3-on-3 basketball tournament. We've had a great turnout so far in signups. We will also be having an end-of-the-year dance. We're going to hold it outside this year with a student DJ. We're going through new applications for ASB. We have our future president and vice president, as well as both assistant principals, holding interviews. We've been holding them for the past couple of days. We've had a little bit more than 50 applicants for the class, which is an amazing turnout. For our sports, our men's volleyball varsity team made it to the second round of CIF. We had a really fun home game for the first round. We had a really great turnout. Getting really rowdy. It was fun. We have the girls' swimming team. Varsity went to CIF. Their relay team advanced and did very well. We also have our Platinum Pirate Awards night coming up next week, where we will give out the awards to all of the pirate athletes. Coming up on Thursday, we have a college day where all of the students get to wear a shirt or a jacket that the college that they are choosing that they want to go to. We're going to have a few little games for all the seniors to play. Our high school welcomed a new physics/chemistry teacher to replace Mr. Tomac. The replacement's name is Dan Brown. I think we all really like him. He's a really nice guy, and I think he's going to do very well. Our chess club is going to be holding a talent show this 2 weeks from now. It'll be very fun. I think it's going to be a good time overall. And Mr. Nick Nelms won the district writing competition for the narrative genre in writing contest. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Bella Stanball from San Luis Obispo High School.
Hello. First, I would like to introduce this young lady to my right. She's been elected as our next year's ASB president for San Luis Obispo High School. Her name is Caroline Pettyholm. So I'm here introducing her to the board, as she will be taking my place as I move over to the East Coast. So this is Carol. You can wave. what's been going on at Slo High? We had our staff appreciation week run a couple of weeks ago. We had students delivering little Secret Santa type gifts to all of our staff members, as well as a barbecue and a Dress Like Your Teacher Spirit Day on the last Friday of that week. We had a blood drive that ran last Friday, and our school was able to raise 50 units of blood, which was very great. Something that we were able to give back to the community. Right now, actually, at City Council, we have over 60 Slo High students who are receiving the Mayor's Award for Community Service. For those of you who don't know, you have to earn over 80 hours of community service to be recognized, so that's a great accomplishment for our school. We have 64 people who are applying for ASB this year for commissioner positions, which are more specific job positions. So 64 people going for 15 positions, which is really amazing, and I think a testament to what our ASB at Slo High has gone to do this year, because that many people want to be involved. We have our Tiger Olympics, which are running Friday, where 5th and 6th graders from throughout the county are coming in and getting to see what life is like at Slo High. ASB students will be running tours, as well as participating in a lot of field events. So that'll be a really great day for us to show them what high school will be like as they get to go around campus. Our prom is this Saturday at Pavilion on the Link. Its theme is Rendezvous Beneath the Blossoms. So that'll be a really fun event for all of our students. A lot of our seniors, it's their last high school dance. We have a senior recognition assembly, which is going to be next Wednesday, the 25th, at 9 a.m., which you're all invited to. It's when we recognize our seniors. They show up in their college gear, and we recognize CSF, AVID, and also we have all of our incoming freshmen on campus, which is very fun. So they get to see where everyone's heading off to and also get to walk around campus and be a part of tours as well. So it's a very exciting day. Our 24-hour relay at Slo High is coming up Memorial Day weekend, so we have a lot of people gearing up for that. I know Carol is one of the front runners as far as planning that, so that's going to be a very exciting event for our school. We have SBAC testing running right now for our 11th graders, and at a fashion show run last week, our FHA Hero Club was able to raise $1,160 to fund their national competition in San Diego in July, which is very exciting for that group. And other than that, we just have a lot of seniors who are getting ready to graduate, which is very exciting. But yes, that's what's going on at Slo High. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Unger.
And I just want to acknowledge Bella, because I was able to attend, and I know it's a little premature, but I was at the Big Brothers, Big Sisters annual event last week, and Bella was the featured speaker, and she talked about her experience with her little, and just how she got there. It was really a great experience. Thank you, Bella.
Okay, well, as always, we thank you for coming, and we enjoy hearing about what's going on at both of our comprehensive high schools. You are certainly welcome to stay, participate in our discussion. You may want to stay and hear the employees of the year, but if you have other things that you're involved in, we know that you lead very busy lives, and you're welcome to leave any time that you're ready. Thank you very much for coming. Okay, I'm going to depart from the agenda just briefly because I'm told that Bob Shanbrom is here, formerly of Los Osos, now of San Luis Obispo, and someone that I know, and he would like to share the Inclusion Students of the Year. Bob?
Well, I didn't know. I was going to have a special...
You're a special guy.
I was just going to wait in line here, but thank you
so much. Well, the reason I'm here tonight is to really say thank you to everybody here, everybody in this room, really, for providing such a great experience for the kids. And my son's my daughter's in college now, freshman, and I have a freshman in high school here. And so earlier this year, kind of stimulated by all the bad news that happens across the country, all the school shootings and terrible things, I started thinking about how to make students, alienated students, feel a little more included, a little bit more part of our society. And so working with special ed teacher Adam Bash and Leslie O'Connor, who gave some superb edits, we came up with a program we call the We Belong Inclusion Award. And what it consists of is $25, kind of a surprise, $25 given to two students every month or so. And Bella won in April. And it's given to students who are caught being good, essentially, including kids who normally would not be included in the larger society. So just a little background on this. I want to recognize some of the people who've had some influence on the thinking that went into this. One was out at Monarch Grove. I remember when our kids were out there, I remember Jim Skoulis had a writing on a wall that said, "Everybody can play." I thought, wow, that's a really good message for all the kids to get. And then, of course, the we spent, 8 years, I guess, 7 years at C.L. Smith with Amy Shields. And that was the first campus. It really essentially had no bullying. I mean, there was no discernible bullying of any kind. I think Amy kind of pioneered that and about 100 other things all on her own. And then I think the district has recognized the importance of this and been very proactive with a very good anti-bullying policy that I think you should be congratulated and appreciated for that. To sum up, I think my idea of education is that it's universal, compulsory, and free. Education is the most democratizing institute in our society. And I thank you all, everybody in this room, really, for helping to build a better society through your hard work here and for building such a great community. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, moving back to the regular agenda, we have Employees of the Year, Administrative Employee of the Year, Classified, Physical Support, School Support, and Teacher.
This is a great, I'm going to talk about them first. So this is a great event, and we are so excited to have so many outstanding employees here. We have many employees that we would like to discuss tonight. I first want to read the names of the employees of the year that were nominated in the four categories that are up above that are not here tonight but have been nominated. And if you are here, please stand. But in Administration and Management, Steve Stewart. In clerical support, Debbie Hill, Carrie Trujillo, Lori Valens. In physical support, Wendy Munsauer, Mike Silva. In school support, Tony Barajas, Kathleen Benedict, Rolando Cerda, Laura Groff, Michelle Penzel, Laura Schwerer, and Sarah Taylor were all nominated. So let's give them a big hand. But at this moment, I'd like to introduce you to the winners after all of those nominations that we received. And I'm going to ask them to come up here, and then I'm going to ask all our site teachers to come up here, and then I'm going to introduce our district teacher of the year. And after that, after they come up, then I'm going to have you come in front, and they're going to go through and get their certificates from you, and then we're going to enjoy cake together. But I'm going to start with our administrator of the year, and she is not able to be here this evening, but I'd like to read some information about her anyway, and that is Annie Sharp. Annie is being nominated for the following reasons. She always greets her employees. Even when she gets upset, she'll still make her people feel like they're number one. She constantly reminds us to slow down and be safe while on the road. If a transportation issue should arise, she will radio everyone until she can get the support needed for a resolution. During in-house training, she's clear, concise, patient, and open for questions if the staff is not sure of the content being presented. She's meticulous about meeting deadlines, being prepared, being presentable, and always smiling. In other words, impression is everything. We, as school bus drivers, because we received like 17 nominations for Annie Sharp, we as school bus drivers do what we can to help our brothers and sister drivers in need. I feel, the person that wrote this says, I feel that Annie is grateful when we group together for the good of our children within San Luis Coastal. We are also not afraid to go outside of our comfort zone to help our sister school districts. Annie's been doing all aspects of transportation for many years and knows it extremely well. She anticipates what we will say because she has already been there. At the end of our day, the smile on Annie's face tells us that today was uneventful and that translates to a great day.
And so just for the board to know, Annie Sharp is actually at a professional development opportunity right now, and there was a couple of in-services on special education transportation that she wanted to attend. So my idea is I will make her come to the next board meeting so that we can recognize her there as well.
Thank you.
Okay. So the next person I'd like to bring up is David Hartshorn. And David has been chosen as our physical support employee of the year. Dave is the lead custodian at Sinsheimer Elementary School. Dave goes out of his way to fix things every single day and with an incredibly positive attitude. He is the can-do man. He takes it upon himself to ensure we have his support in anything we need. Forget to clean up supplies after the assembly. Dave already put them away by the time you go back to check. Principals or teachers requesting changes to event setups, Dave's already working on a solution to the problem. Sink's not working or the door with the weird paint bugging you? Not for long. Dave is already on it. He is the most positive, proactive custodian the staff has ever worked with. And this one person said, I've been at many schools around the world. Students, staff, and parents all know, appreciate it, and look forward to working with Dave. He is truly exceptional. Thank you, Dave. The next person I would like to bring up is Lisa Chan. So Lisa is our clerical support employee of the year and our overall classified district employee of the year. Lisa has proven to be a valuable asset to the food services department. She takes care of processing all the free and reduced meal applications. She completes all the reports necessary for reimbursement from the state and federal government. Lisa verifies and pays all food service bills. She keeps tracks of accounts payable, receivable, profit and loss for the department. Many school districts have numerous staff to do the job that Lisa does singularly. All this is done in a calm, polite, courteous manner. She is always the professional. Kathy Martin says, I have been with the district for over 25 years, and I have worked with four others that have held her position. She, by far, is the most efficient, effective, and professional to ever have held the title. So thank you, Lisa. Our next employee of the year is our school support employee of the year. And then this category encompasses both classified and certificated employees, and this was a really tough decision for us this year. But this year we have given this award to Judith Geyer. Woo! And here's what was written about Judith. Judith is a school nurse and models a positive attitude and uncompromising work ethic in everything she does for San Luis Coastal. She is immediately responsive to all requests from administration, staff, and students, and happily completes even the most mundane task. The San Luis Coastal nursing model has changed drastically in the past 2 years. During this period, Judith has remained unwavering in her professional integrity. Despite adjustments required of credentialed school nurses by these changes in our school health model, Judith has picked up the burden of leadership during this period without any complaints. In addition to her existing responsibilities, Judith has sought resources and guidance to help create a new system of student health supports throughout the district. She has assisted in the hiring, supervision, and created the training program for each new support staff member. She is relentlessly positive and always views problems as opportunities for growth and improvement. We are proud to work alongside Judith, is what her department says. The long hours, her infectious personality, and unwavering commitment to student health have paid great dividends for students, schools, and the district. Thank you, Judith. Next, I would like to bring up our site teachers of the year. And although I'm not going to say, they have all been honored at their school site, and so I'm not going to be speaking about each one of them, but I am really proud to have them here with us tonight, and many staff members are here to support them. And if I could have you line up on this side, I'd really appreciate it so that we can go through and do the certificates. So first, there's Erin Clyburn from Baywood Elementary. Next, we have Roseanne Horner from Los Ranchos Special Education. Next, we have Carissa Berglund. Who I know has gotten married and is now not Berglund anymore, but she is Child. Yes. Amy Erickson is not here tonight, but Amy Erickson was the Sinsheimer's Teacher of the Year. Next, we have Terry Norlock from Laguna Middle School PE. Next, we have Gwen Fahey, teacher from Los Osos Middle School Special Education. And last, we have Ryan Mamarella, Morro Bay High School teacher, English. So you can see that we had a very tough field to choose between. But we ended up, in the long run, it was a very tough decision, but our committee is made up of other teachers of the year from past years, and we looked through all the application, and this year we chose William Walters from... So I'd like to read you a little bit about William. His nomination said, William is not only a master teacher, he is one of the most dedicated and selfless human beings that I have had the good fortune to meet and work alongside. He is highly respected by parents, paraeducators, school site staff. He is beloved by his students and is admired for all his quiet manner and professional expertise. He is truly one in a million. William approaches life with a smile on his face and a can-do attitude. He works under the radar. He is an active member of the school campus and is always willing to pitch in whenever needed. William is the epitome of poise. He is articulate. He is able to communicate effectively with students, parents, and members of the school community. He is upbeat and positive. Watching William on a daily basis inspired the person that wrote this to not only be a better teacher and principal, He inspires me to be a better father, husband, member of the human race. His love is endless, and his commitment to the students he serves is bottomless. Come into William's class or walk the hallways and see him pushing and working with students around the track. He is special because he has chosen some of the most impacted students with which to work. He never shirks his duty, and he does it in an effortless and unassuming manner. Finally, he volunteers his time in the summer at the local surf school for students with special needs. And we would like to honor William tonight. So, Dave, I'm going to have you go that direction, and everybody's going to follow behind you, and everybody wants to shake all of your hands. So you get to, it's like a wedding reception. You get to start with Dr. Prater.
Okay, the board is back in session. And moving on, we have correspondence. I have no correspondence noted. Do any members of the board have correspondence they would care to share?
Late.
Okay. Then we will move to public comment. The board has received one request, I think, to speak.
Denise Palermo. Hi, members of the board. My name is Denise Palermo, and I'm here as a parent, but I'm also an educator. I'm here to speak about policy and procedure regarding awarding of varsity letters. And
it's okay, Denise.
Okay. tonight, I could go on and on about this, but I'm going to try and keep it really short. Because I know you guys have other things to do. And I wouldn't be here if there was any other reason. I thought I could maybe get this figured out through other avenues, but I've exhausted all avenues, and I feel as if athletic awards, varsity letters, and academics are awarded heavily and often and regularly. And as you know, you all know, when you go to a sporting event, there's varsity letters, you know, varsity, I'm kind of nervous,
varsity athletes competing. What I want recognized, I guess, in the high schools more is that there is criteria set forth in the San Luis Obispo High School Procedures Manual, Tiger Topics, regarding awarding letters for other students in theater and choir and band and probably all departments. They should be in all departments, but I noticed all departments aren't noticed. And with that criteria, what I'd like to see put into action is it clarified that they also be awarded appropriately by the department heads annually. Right now, it looks as if it's kind of at the whim of the teacher or the department if they want to or not. And I've been that parent to write letters early in the year, encouraging, offering my help, my service, anything I can do to make that happen for those deserving juniors and seniors in theater, choir, band. I think band is doing it regularly. Choir, 3 years ago, I advocated for them, and the director finally did acknowledge those seniors and juniors that were that earned them, and I got many thanks from parents and students after that. I don't know if they're still doing that, but I hope they are because it should be done. And now theater is my area right now that I feel like it's something that these students earn these awards, these letters. They should be awarded. It shouldn't be at the whim of the teacher. It shouldn't take a parent to write letters all year. It shouldn't be up to the students to say, yes, please, I want my letter, and be embarrassed because all the others aren't being awarded. In conclusion, I think what I'd like to be seen done is have an investigation or else just some policy written that they will be awarded every year appropriately for those students. And I have a lot more to say about varsity letters and how important they are to students, but I'm going to assume that we as educators know how important they are. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone who did not submit a written request but who would like to address the board in public comment? Seeing no one, then we'll move on. And the next item are superintendent's updates. Mr. Pinkerton, the business and budget update.
Yeah, so the governor released the May revise last week. And after going through it, it's much the same as was kind of planned in January, the governor put forward. This year, in comparison to other years, the revenues have not continued to grow in terms of the state coffers. So where we saw one-time funds grow and be pretty substantial, this year it pretty much stayed the same as what the governor had put out in January, and so he's seen kind of a flat. But it was interesting because the governor throughout the May revise really warned of this potential economic slowdown. I mean, it was throughout everything as he kind of went through it. The one thing that kind of stood out to me, I would say that in terms of for us, was early education block grant. So he's actually looking at pulling TK out of being something that's a legal requirement for districts to do, and taking those funds. And I think what it came down to basically was not funding preschool for kind of middle class, higher income class, that he wants to kind of pull those dollars out of TK and put them towards low income students. Mm-hmm. So for us at San Luis Coastal, we have our preschool program that the district funds. We don't receive any extra money from the state for that. TK as well. And TK was a mandatory program that we had to start as the governor, as the state, kind of each year the kids being able to start kindergarten, the age decreased, right? So where it's now set to, they have to turn 5 by September, I believe it is. And so that's now ingrained in the system. And so it'll be interesting to see if this really is going to go through and be passed in July. I think there's going to be a lot of opposition to it because TK has become kind of a program that I think our parents and people expect to have. So, but it'll be just an interesting dynamic because what that'll mean for us as in San Luis Coastal is that we would have the potential of not having those classes in 2017-18. So that wouldn't be a mandatory program like it is now. Again, other districts receive extra funds for TK. We do not. So yet we still have the requirement to have those courses. those classes for students. So that it's just something we'll see what happens when the governor signs the budget and it gets through the process. But that is really kind of an interesting dynamic to begin a program like that, and then after 2 years to kind of pull out from it was kind of an interesting dynamic. So we'll see, and I'll keep the board abreast of that.
Do you have any idea what the cost of running our TK programs are?
Well, currently we have 5 teachers, right? Is it 4 or 5? We have 5 TK classes, so it's substantial.
So that's somewhere $400,000 and $500,000.
$80,000 per teacher, $400,000,
and aides
as well. So probably $500,000. So it could be a substantial. And again, we're not looking. Those are credentialed teachers. That if for something like that were to happen, they would have an elementary spot in our district because we with retirements, those types of things. So I don't envision this being a layoff situation for us. But again, we'll see if it really gets there in July, if this really goes through, and then it wouldn't be until the 17-18 school year.
I think Mr. Buckman has a question.
Just did I hear you say block grant? Would convert the funding to block grant? Is this the one?
So they're talking about taking the TK funds right now the districts mm-hmm. receive and basically just saying, hey, instead of you having to do TK, you now just have this block of money to do preschool education.
Okay.
So they could do something that's more like our preschool model, not necessarily where it is, for students that, did not turn 5 by September.
And so my understanding would a block grant would be then they could say, here's X amount of money, and if your attendance goes up, it's too bad, here's X amount of money, because it's a block grant as opposed to being tied to...
Could be, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks.
Is this the same thing that... I know there's concern from a lot of the major education groups about preschool for next year, and wholesale changes in the way it's being funded and the expectations for it. And there's a lot of opposition to that.
Yes.
Because folks are saying that it has not been well planned out. It's a policy decision that has been essentially a political decision. Is this the same thing
yes.
we're talking about?
I think people's expectation was that the governor and the state were going to put more money into preschool education, not take away a program like TK. So I think that's kind of what set people off. And then how it's funded in terms of where the money goes, does it go to the county? Does it go directly to the district? How is that money going to be dispersed is probably something that other groups are worried about, concerned about.
Well, yeah, most of the major education groups in California are opposed to that.
Yes.
And along Chris's lines, this was also something that if it was adopted, and even if it was adopted next week, we would only have a few months to implement it. Am I getting that correctly? Is this the AB?
I think for us, it's not going to affect us that much in terms of our TK program. It would be for the following 17-18 year. So, because we don't receive any preschool money right now from the state, it wouldn't necessarily have to change our program here. We're the TK for at least a year, but it'll be really interesting to see where this goes politically.
Okay, thank you. Ed Services update, Mr. Robinette.
Unless the board has any specific questions for me, I'd like to forego the Ed Services report in the interest of a lengthy agenda.
Okay. Measure D update, back to Mr. Pinkerton.
So we had the board members that were able to make it to the study session. We had a great study session Friday, I thought, in terms of going through the bridging documents and the plans, and I can update those board members who won't be able to make it. I just wanted to share that we have our groundbreaking for the Morro Bay High School pool and tennis court projects, and kind of kicking off Measure D, and that'll be Friday at Morro Bay High School at 9 a.m. And so really we had a great groundbreaking at San Luis Obispo High School and look forward to kind of doing the same at Morro Bay High School.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any questions. We'll move on to... I'm opening a public hearing on the 2016-2017 LCAP and budget.
I'm multitasking here. rather than speak much on this item, I just want you've essentially opened the hearing. I just want to make sure the board's aware and the public's aware. We have a requirement to do a public hearing on our local control accountability plan and our budget, and we'll open and close the hearing momentarily. But just so everyone is aware, over the next 2-week period between now and when the board actually adopts the local control accountability plan and the budget, there's plenty of opportunity to continue public dialogue and public comment. So with that, it's up the chair can open and take input and close the public hearing.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to the LCAP and proposed budget for 16-17? Okay, seeing no one, I'm going to close the hearing then. The next three items are resolutions, the first being Resolution 14-15-16, Classified School Employee Week.
So next week is the Classified School Employee Week. I mean, actually, it's this week, the 15th through the 21st. And so we would like to proclaim this Classified Employee Week. And I have heard, Marilyn, that you often like to read the resolution. So if you would like to, you are more than welcome to do that. Or if you'd like me to do that, I can also do that. Or if you'd just like to accept it, that's fine, too.
Well, I think in honor of our classified employees, I will read this resolution, although you were misinformed. I said I would read the two following resolutions very quickly. This one I don't intend to read quickly because I think it's important. Resolution 14-15-16, a proclamation designating May 15th through May 21st, 2016, as Classified School Employee Week. Whereas classified school employees provide valuable services to the schools and students of the district, and whereas classified school employees contribute to the establishment and promotion of a positive instructional environment, and whereas classified school employees serve a vital role in providing for the welfare and safety of the district students, and whereas classified employees employed by the district and represented by California School Employees Association, CSEA, Service Employees International Union, SEIU, and Confidential Employee Units strive for excellence in all areas relative to the educational community. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District hereby recognizes and wishes to honor the contribution of the classified school employees to quality education in the state of California and in the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, and declares the week of May 15th through 21st, 2016, as Classified School Employee Week. Adopted this 17th day of May by the Board of Education of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District by the following roll call vote.
We need a second, a motion and a second, and I will call the roll.
I move adoption of the resolution number 14-15-16.
And I'll second.
So we have a motion by Mr. Questenberry and a second by Dr. Eisengrath Rogers.
Mr. Questenberry?
Aye.
Dr. Eisengrath Rogers? Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Schiffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Passes 7-0.
Thank you.
So I'm going to handle these next two since I do most of the legwork on your election planning. So the November general election is also the time period when three of your trustee seats will be on the ballot as you have terms expiring. And in order to make that happen, the board is required first to call an order of election and forward that to the county superintendent, who sends it on to the secretary clerk at the county office, at the Board of Supervisors, so that that ballot can be printed accurately. And then to make that an efficient election, we adopt the second resolution, which is a consolidation, combines your election with all of the other issues going on in the county so that there's just one ballot and you pay a prorated portion of that amount. So those two go hand in hand.
Okay, so then we're looking for a motion on...
I'll make a motion to adopt number 15-15-16, the order of election.
So.
Okay. Mrs. Schiffer?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisengrath Rogers? Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Okay, then I'll make a motion on number 16, 15, 16, consolidation of the election.
I'll second that.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Okay, item 10.1, the 2016-2017 LCAP document. This is a first reading.
Thank you. The Local Control Accountability Plan was introduced last week. It is not our intent to review with the board what has already been shared, but I will summarize a few concepts. So what is the Local Control Accountability Plan, the LCAP? Well, the LCAP is a compliance document. It is required by law. It replaces many reports that used to be tied to categorical funds. Its compliance is largely connected to the LEA plan addendum, which is also on tonight's agenda and actually I think is a much easier document to read. And the template has been simplified for the LCAP over the last 3 years, but it still kind of reads like a compliance document and isn't necessarily the most user-friendly thing. The LCAP is also about stakeholder input. While we have always been a district that plans and performs very publicly, we are required to seek and consider the opinions of our parents and staff and students. And while we cannot do everything in a world of limited resources, we can be responsive to a lot of ideas, and I believe we have. The LCAP is an action plan. It isn't about who we are, but where we are going, what we are planning to do. Under Dr. Prater's leadership, we have been in constant motion. Opening up preschools, advancing in STEAM education, expanding community outreach, initiating alternative school models, becoming a district that embraces career and college readiness, and building new modern facilities. There isn't a lot of standstill in this plan as we continue to be progressive and ambitious. But the LCAP is also about goals. Annual measurable outcomes are included for each section, and those have become very clear also in the LEA plan addendum you'll be hearing about later. It's about accountability, and this can only be attained through results. We will meet some results, exceed many, hopefully, and likely fall short here and there. This is what makes the LCAP ideally a living, breathing document, one that we don't put on the shelf but derive data from to derive our next steps. As we have shared before, we have divided our attention into six focus areas, and I'm not going to go over all those plans. Mathematics is the first area, continuing largely with the Common Core model that we've been working on. Language arts and literacy, with special emphasis on a new reading curriculum and a commitment to early literacy intervention. The third is STEAM and career technical education, where a lot of our energy goes towards the new science standards, the arts programs, and the supporting the work of our growing CTE program. The fourth is the culture of care, which takes in our increase in mental health supports in our schools, our work in mainstreaming and continued focus on special education students, campus safety, and connectedness. Technology and innovation is the fifth focus area, making sure that digital literacy, rich access, and personalized learning is available for all. And the sixth item, or the sixth focus area, is to use data as our means toward improvement, focused on formative assessment, cycles of inquiry, use of instructional coaches, and evidence-based evaluation of our instructors. Peter Drucker said, efficiency is doing things right, but effectiveness is doing the right things. So hopefully you have a plan that is focused on the right things for our kids. Tonight and over the next couple of weeks, when the board will be asked to adopt the LCAP, we're open to your questions, the questions of the public, and, of course, any adjustments the board wants to make. In fact, the law requires that if people ask questions, the superintendent or designees will answer those questions and get input back to people or responses back to people. So with that, staff is here for your questions and any comments you might have, want to make, or adjustments the board would like to make. This is a first reading. This will be back again in front of you at the next board meeting.
Thank you. Mr. Unger.
I just wanted to say give kudos to the staff for the hard job they did, or the work they did on this extremely detailed, probably unnecessarily so detailed document. Just know that hopefully within the next year or so, the it will be an easier document to read and an easier document to implement, an easier document for our communities to understand. I would just point out to anybody listening that our document this year went from 40 to 148 pages, and most of it was duplications, just requirements, what I would almost consider silly requirements from the state that I'm not sure help actually advance the cause of student achievement. So again, just thanks and congratulations on all the hard work.
Mr. Buckman.
Hi. Thank you. I second everything Chris said. I think I know where you're speaking from. I was at Delegate Assembly. Chris was there. They did a great job with breakout groups. And I had the opportunity of talking to some of the staff and bringing forward some thoughts from San Luis Coastal, which we did breakout groups, we assigned priorities, and a lot of San Luis Coastal's ideas made it to the priority list up at CSPA. So that was great. I do have just two sort of comments and questions. One, at some point in the LCAP, and I'm sorry I didn't write down the page, but it does call for access for students to the students can have access to the ETC portal both at home and at school. And I'd like to point out that that would require internet access, and we don't have citywide. Our students aren't all connected, so just point that out. And I think I'll just leave it at that. That's an important one to me. And again, to echo what Chris says, this document is just, if we have the public giving us input, we have our staff and students giving us input, and then this, unfortunately, is the document that the state requires us to submit based on a template and a rubric, and it's as if they really don't want anybody to read it, and that's unfortunate.
I will say, though, the good news for us, you know, I don't want to be too disparaging of the document. It has evolved in a better way, I think, than what we originally had. But it does, it aligns with our local education plan. I mean, so it helps us also align our schools to all the same focus areas. So this is, you know, whatever flaws might occur in the 148-page document, it does keep us in alignment and keep us focused. And I think it still represents a living document for us and not something that sits on a shelf.
Okay. Are there any other board comments? Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, then we'll move on to 2016-17 budget review. This is a first reading presented by Mrs. Lang.
Yes, and Mr. Pinkerton.
And Mr. Pinkerton.
And there's a PowerPoint, Kim, if you wouldn't mind putting that up. So we have completed the 16-17 budget and also done some budget adjustments for our estimated actuals. That we'll go over tonight, and we'll look at the estimated actuals first, and then we'll go over the budget, and then Brian will take you into the future. You didn't think this was going to be exciting. But first, I would like to acknowledge the hard work of the staff and fiscal services. I'm sorry. Thank you. And Sharon Bloom and Debbie Houseman, who helped do this budget development, and everybody else that does their job so that we have time to do this budget development. So, starting with estimated actuals, we think that our revenues, the way they're budgeted, are going to come in pretty much how they're budgeted. There are some federal and local programs that are considered deferred revenue programs, so if we don't spend all of the money that comes in, that revenue that isn't spent will be deferred to the next year. So there is a chance that the revenues will actually go down for this year, but it just means that we're transferring it from one year to the next year. Expenditures, as budgeted, we think are going to be less, as usual. We do carry over a number of things. We got a lot of new money this year that we haven't spent yet, so we're estimating that there's going to be about $1.5 million in carryover. There's going to be probably at least $200,000 that remains just unspent that isn't carried over. And then if we could go to the next page, Kim. So what we're looking at for our estimated actuals, we started our year with about a $16 million balance.
We're estimating our revenues at a little over $90 million. And then our estimated expenses, we think are going to come in around $88.8 million, which would mean we'd have a surplus at the end of the year of about $1.4 million and would make our ending balance for this year about $17,500,000. Now, some of that, or most of that, if not all of that, will be carried over into next year and will be rebudgeted into next year as well. And some of it will be deferred, and some of it will be considered an ending balance, which means we book the revenue in 1 year and actually pay the expense in the next year. So on the budget side, we are estimating our revenues and transfers in for next year at about $87.7 million. We put in a 3% property tax increase. We think that's realistic and conservative. I don't think it's going to come in less than that. Over the years, even with the down years, it's usually a little bit more than that. Our one-time mandated cost reimbursement is budgeted at $200 per ADA. The governor's May revision did change that amount to, I think it's $237 per ADA, which will increase it by about $260,000. So we'll rebudget that. We did not budget MA revenues. They're still coming in kind of sporadically. We don't have a good timeline on those, and we're not really sure the amount. So we'll budget those as they come in rather than assuming that we're going to get something. And, of course, you know, we never budget for donations or for our billing accounts. And our deferred revenues are going to be budgeted after we know what they are when we close the books. The county office gives us estimates on our special ed revenues, and those are budgeted based on their estimates. Our contributions to special ed are budgeted at $7.9 million. It's interesting. I did kind of a study, and our special ed revenues have been very flat. They're just basically get COLA, and sometime next year we don't have any COLA, and a couple of years ago we didn't have any COLA, and 1 year it was actually negative. So really the revenues have been flat, and of course we're paying more in salary and benefits and hiring people, and so the costs keep going up while the revenues stay flat. And the transfer in from Fund 20 to pay for the retiree benefits is budgeted at $1 million, so that'll be a revenue into the general fund. Expenditures we expect to come in at about $88.8 million. This budget only includes step and column increases. STIRS rate is up to 12.58 for next year, up from 10.73, and the PERS rate is up to 13.888, up from 11.847. Health and welfare, we budgeted with a 6% increase, and that'll be reevaluated after the open enrollment and we know what people are actually signing up for. We don't have anything budgeted yet in equipment, vehicle replacement, or the transfer to Fund 20 to cover our retiree benefit liability. After we find out what our property taxes come in at, we'll budget those. And then, of course, the expenditure amounts are going to increase as well after we know what our carryover amounts are when we close the books at year end.
So, Julie, let me ask a quick question. When you made reference earlier to transfers in from Fund 20 to the general fund, I assume, is that to actually pay benefits for those retirees?
Yes.
So in order for us not to have our
unfunded liability.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Not worsen. At some point, we're going to have to look at the budget and transferring fund money into Fund 20.
Right. Our last actuarial put our liability at about $16 million, I think. And if we didn't transfer the $1 million back to Fund 20 for next year, I think we've got an ending balance of about $8.1 million in Fund 20 now.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We talked about the LCAP budget. We try as much as possible to budget. We actually use the LEA plan to budget because it is easier to read. And we budget everything in discretionary codes 3910 through 3960 whenever we can. There are some codes that have been kind of used historically, so we keep those in place. And then we also have a special code for the portion of the LCAP that's supplemental budget. and that's in resource 0200. And these are the amounts that we have budgeted right now, and should be pretty close to what was presented to you at the last board meeting. There might be a little bit of variance because of salary and benefits. With the May revise, the LCFF gap rate actually increased to 52.2%, so it's actually even a little bit more, even though the governor doesn't think that the economy is going to stay. He's still increasing that LCAP gap funding. But you can see that we're still ahead of the game. So for 16-17, property tax per ADA is about $9,200. And at the new gap funding rate, the LCFF that we would receive, if we received LCFF, would be about $8,219 per ADA. So it is gaining on property taxes, but we're still staying ahead of it. And then this is something that we're required to do now because of that reserve cap. We have to explain our reserves that exceed the minimum. We have to set aside 3% for economic uncertainties. That amount is $2,664,907. We have, and through the wisdom of the board, putting in a 10% economic uncertainty, we set aside an additional $6,218,115 for economic uncertainties. That's at the toward the bottom there. And then we also have certain programs that we are continuing to fund. For instance, adult ed. Their balance is $356,000. We have the instructional materials realignment block grant. We still have $1.5 million in there to use for textbook adoptions. Catastrophic leave really belongs to the employees, so we continue carrying that over. We're estimating our site and department carryover to be about $375,000. Of course, you know that we budget our lottery expenses 1 year in arrears, so that's in our ending balance. And then we're setting aside $1 million for that transfer back to Fund 20 so we can keep the other post-employment benefit liability funded. So our total assigned balance is $10,697,000. And our unassigned balance is $124,000, leaving our reserves in excess of the minimum at $10,822,130. And I will turn it over to Brian.
So again, kudos to Judy and your staff. By bringing this to you tonight and having these, you know, Dr. Prater likes to have an extra kind of opportunity for the public with the LCAP. They just got the software a week and a half ago to put this all together and to pull it together. So again, for her department to be able to do this, get this going, is fantastic. You know, really unaudited actuals is when we really know what our revenues and expenditures are for the year. So we get that in the fall. So this is kind of it's an estimate, right, in terms of where we think our revenues are going to be, where we think our expenditures are going to be. And it can change. It often can. And then again, we have that big November date when we actually find out what our property tax revenues are going to be. And so for us as a district, that's a key time for us to know exactly how this budget is going to unfold. So it's kind of like a wave over the course of the year in terms of how the budget goes. And oftentimes, like Julie said, you know, at the second interim, it looked like we were $3 million in the hole for this year. When in actuality, seven-year budget, looking at what really is probably going to happen, we end up having excess for this year. So that's why we created the seven-year budget, kind of a projection based on what we've really received in revenues over the past few years, really expended in the past few years. For the board to know, we have been super fortunate because as a basic aid school district, we have received those one-time funds that all the other school districts have received over the last few years. Last year, over $4 million. So when we looked at our revenues, the $90 million, $4 million of that was one-time funds. So it's terrific. It's fantastic. It's really helped us stay afloat. It's helped us deal with some of the stirs and purrs, and we've given substantial raises to employees. I mean, we've done really good things over the past years, as well as all the wonderful programs, preschool, our LCAP, all the things that we've done as a district. It's been fantastic. This year we're looking at, again, about $1 million in one-time funds from the state. So that's great. It's terrific to receive those. That's put into our revenues. But our expenditures are actually growing a little bit this year. So, again, we went from $90 million in revenues to now $88 million in revenues. And our expenditures are going from 88 to 89, so growing a little bit. Now, we've only estimated a 3% property tax increase at this time because we want to be relatively conservative in terms of how that comes, and we'll see what happens in terms of in November. We feel good about that. So we've really maintained, I would say, with all the things we've done, a good course in terms of our budget. But we're unfortunately kind of hitting a point, and Julie touched on it in a couple key things, and that is the STIRS and PERS liability, 2% in each of those, for that each one of our employees costs an extra 2%, right, as well as our health and welfare benefits going up 5 to 6%. It seems like every single year. So those personnel costs are kind of the key. With the budget that we have, revenues, expenditures, right now it looks like our personnel costs are roughly in the 86 to 87% realm. And as the board, we had our study school services a few years back. Really 85% is where we want to kind of keep it. So I feel good in terms of staying in that realm. We were at a point as in the district at a 92%, right, where we had to do some dramatic things. So it's really important that we kind of keep that personnel expense in line. You know the new buses, using the one-time money, all those types of things are key. What Julie was trying to say in some of this, too, is that this year, with some of those one-time funds that we received, those are going to get budgeted as expenditures next year. So the CTE grants, the educator effectiveness funds. So things like they have specific purposes that they're going to be spent on. And so those will transfer as expenditures into next year. So it will take down the ending balance. So Kim, if you'll go down actually to the expenditure side. So as of kind of this first blush look at our budget in terms of revenues and expenditures, again, we have our positive we believe for the 15-16 school years in terms of our ending balance. It looks like right now it's about $1 million deficit in terms of revenues expense at this point in the budget cycle. So again, that's based on the 3% property tax potential. So we'll see how that kind of ends up. But it's just something where, you know, again, these out years, we just have to be cautious and careful as we, you know, as we negotiate with our union groups, as we move forward, and as we really keep a hold of those personnel costs as we move forward. So this is the first reading of the budget for the board to kind of give you a look. Again, we still have a very healthy ending balance as a district. We're in great shape. We're doing great things. And so it's kind of that balance where I don't want to alarm you in terms of where we're headed potentially, because we're still in a good place this year, and I feel like 16-17 we're still going to be in a good place. But definitely those STIRS and PERS and health benefits concerns, and again, this is statewide. It's not just for our school district. We're fortunate in that property tax values have continued to rise, which has helped us as a basic aid school district. But the way the governor's speaking in May revise in his budget, really talking about this is kind of the last year LCFF big funding. So for them, they're going to kind of hit a hard cap in terms of their extra funding source. They're not going to receive a lot of extra funding. So it's all districts in the state are facing the same issue in the out years. So I do feel good in terms of where we're at in terms of the budget for this year, with our ending balance, with the things that we have in our LCAP and our budget. And then we'll, as we know for sure what unaudited actuals come out, we'll be telling the board. I would, again, expect the ending balance to potentially even rise due to some of the one-time funds that we have. And then we'll kind of reassess again in November where we're at in terms of our property tax revenues. And then, at that point, I think really – seeing what we need to do to kind of combat these things. November is a big election date for us, and that's the Prop 30. Is probably going to be on the ballot. So for us as a basic aid school district, that's about $1.4 million that we receive. So Julie showed you a slide that had the basic aid amount versus what LCFF would be. Now, mind you, that's just our property tax money. On top of that, we also receive our categorical funds from the state as well as our Prop 30 funds. So we're up over $4 million. So that's not part of that $9,000 per student that you see on this chart. So the basic aid funding mechanism that we have, we're very fortunate, I would say, as a district in terms of that. So that's a big, those are big items that you really see our budget dramatically have deficits in the out years if Prop 30 doesn't pass. So questions?
Back to your projection.
Mm-hmm.
Under benefits, you have STRS and you have STRS on behalf. Can you explain why you have both those?
Yeah, so we added that this year to our seven-year budget. And so the state, basically, when they passed the new retirement benefits, the state wanted to show the public what they're putting forward in terms of teacher retirement benefits. So the employee pays, the state pitches in for STRS retirement, and the district pays a substantial amount. So that STRS on behalf is actually, it's on both revenues as well as expenditures. It's the same amount. So basically the state helps pay for part of the teacher retirement system. So that's what that green line.
But that money comes to the district. It doesn't just go right directly to STRS.
It goes into the STRS.
Thank you.
Yes. And it's a wash in terms of us because it's both revenues and expenditures, so it doesn't affect our budget at all. They just wanted to show what it is.
Okay, Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, just one quick question. The MA money was mentioned, mm-hmm. and as I'm looking at this up towards the slide prior to this,
revenues.
So it's right under the word federal. It's MA unrestricted. In 15-16, it looks like almost $300,000.
Goes up, Kim. It's on revenues. Yeah, so federal, it has MA unrestricted, the top line.
Yeah.
So we did receive some funds in 15-16.
$300,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so... Is this a conservative projection,
$5,000? Well, yeah, I mean, we're conservative to a certain extent, but we, to be honest with you, we have no idea whether we're going to get MA funds or not.
Okay.
And for years prior to this, we received nothing. So it's kind of like all of a sudden we're receiving these mandated cost funds and things that the governor's putting forward. But that's one where there really is no expectation that we're going to receive anything in 16-17. If we do, fantastic. But there's not a lot coming our way.
Okay. And then under the state, just right above the green STRS. Really excited to see the Career Tech Ed incentive.
Yes.
Close to $800,000 over 2 years.
Yeah. So Kim McGrath, her team, have done a fantastic job of going out with the teachers, with the staffs, getting those grants. And so it's substantial. And it's really helping our Measure D cause, I would say, because they're being able to help in terms of buying equipment, getting things for our CTE classes.
Okay. You mentioned Kim and the staff. I thought what I was seeing was the SLOPE grant here, the $400,000. So is the SLOPE grant from the county, is that represented?
It's part of it.
Okay, yeah. Thanks. Anyway, good for our kids.
Yes.
Are there any other comments? Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Okay, seeing no one, then thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. We'll move on. Item 10.3, the LEA addendum. This is a first reading. Mrs. Shields.
Good evening. So you remember the No Child Left Behind Act of 2001 mandates that each district develop a local educational agency, or LEA, plan as well as a plan addendum. The LEA addendum is part of the plan. The original purpose of the LEA plan addendum back when was to address the student achievement and or participation needs that have led a school or a district to program improvement. By meeting this requirement, we receive federal and state funding. For San Luis Coastal, the LEA plan addendum has actually become a pretty important document in that it provides a detailed description of our six focus areas, includes the metrics, our action steps, and our budget for the upcoming year. With the sunset of NCLB and the transition to Every Student Success Act, or ESSA, the U.S. Department of Education has begun the process of developing new accountability requirements for districts. It is expected that these requirements will be fully in place in the 2017-18 school year. The good news is that we have received a reprieve from some of the more onerous and somewhat ridiculous requirements for the transition year, but the LEA addendum in its current format is required for the 2016-17 school year. So the addendum follows the goals, as I said before, of our LCAP plan, and it's based on our six focus areas, but it provides that much more detailed, easier for us to use it as district staff. We are required to annually update the LEA addendum and present to the Board of Education for approval. Once approved, the updated document will be shared with principals and sites and uploaded to our district website. Tonight is meant for a first read on this item.
Okay, I'm not seeing any board questions on the LEA addendum. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back. Mr. Buckman.
Hi. You know, it was interesting for me that this, the LEA and the LCAP were on the same agenda, and I read almost all of the 145 pages, maybe. But then I got the LEA, and it was like, did I already read this? Mm-hmm. And it was just like so much duplication. Is the hope that now that NCLB is gone, that LEA is going to be replaced by LCAP? And
I don't want to predict the future. They've given us a transition plan, and all we know for sure is it's going to be different. I think there is a hope if they can make the LCAP plan a little bit more friendly, and you know, able for us to really use it as a working document, it could be good. But I will tell you, the LEA addendum, our plan for this current year, I'd say for both Kim and Diane and myself, it's pretty well dog-eared at this part. I mean, this is what our go-to plan when we're planning events and planning professional development and purchasing things and moving forward. It's like, what did we get approved? What did we say we're going to do? It's that working copy.
Yeah, because it just came across as staff just standing there, you know, doing the same thing, using the same words, I hope. But thanks for the explanation.
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, just kind of thinking about what Mr. Buckman said. At the superintendent's council meeting, which Dr. Prater attended, and at the meeting this weekend, there was a great deal of interest in combining the two documents into one easy-to-read compliance document. I will share that, and I think that's going to be big on people's lobbying agenda.
Okay, and then I have a question. There was a lot of reading involved in this this board packet, and I can't remember where I saw it. It may have been in the budget, or it may have been in the LCAP or the LEA, but it is the money that we provide to Pacheco, in support to Pacheco, and I think it's about $100,000 now. And in past years, some years back, it was considerably more. Can you explain to me what that money, why we provide additional support to the Pacheco program?
Well, when you run a school in two languages, there's first of all that need for additional materials, so that everything that we typically put in place for our other elementary schools in English, Pacheco needs to have both in English and in Spanish. They also use that money to pay a portion of their Spanish-speaking EL aides that support in their classrooms as well. Those are the two major pieces. That $100,000 goes pretty fast.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
I don't see any additional questions from the board. Thank you, Mrs. Shields. Let me get out of this item, and I'll take us back to the agenda. You can see this is long. Item 10.4, dual enrollment courses. I believe this is Mrs. McGrath, isn't it? Yeah.
Good evening. Tonight I would like to bring before you the dual enrollment courses. And Cuesta has asked for a different procedure this year. Last year we were able to bring these courses and ask for your approval in one reading. This year they've asked that to be in two separate board meetings. So tonight I will just ask for it to be the first reading. Similar to last year, these are courses where teachers have met Cuesta's requirements and also have looked over Cuesta's curriculum and have made a agreements between Cuesta and the comprehensive high schools. In order for students to take courses while they are sitting at the high school, yet they are receiving high school credit and community college credit. So this is an excellent opportunity for our students and requires for teachers to meet Cuesta's requirements and jump through a few of their hoops as well. We do receive some funding related to this, a small amount, about $1,000 per course, and that does go back to support the program in which the course is related to. So tonight I just ask that we open this, and it's a first reading for our dual enrollment courses for this coming school year.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back.
Thanks. Thanks, Kimberly. This was really easy to understand. I love the table. Didn't have to read the LCAP again. A few things that I noticed. One, there seems to be a discrepancy between the number of dual enrollment classes that are going to be offered at San Luis High. I'm sorry, I missed the count. But then they're being offered at Morro Bay. So I guess that's my first question, if I can get two.
Yes, so it does depend on Cuesta's qualifications. So the teacher at each comprehensive high school has to meet Cuesta's qualifications. And, you know, they've made those rules, and we have to follow those. So it depends on a teacher's credentials often of whether they have met their requirements.
And then just I totally love the career, actually I would say workforce ready classes, and this seems very heavy on those. But I also am wondering, I'm not sure there's a single core curriculum. I don't see a math or an English. Is that part of what this agreement is under enrollment, or is it coming? Or?
Those courses are actually eligible. Again, it depends on the teacher's credentials and that requirement. The other dilemma that that we have decided to purposely not do is when there are, pick a course, say in English 11, right? And let's say that some of the teachers that teach English 11 are eligible, some of the teachers that teach English 11 are not eligible. We've decided that that is not a good scenario, because how do you decide which students get to go in that class and receive dual enrollment credit and which ones you would say are not, right? Even though they're receiving, you know, very similar curriculum. So that's something that we've decided not to do. So it would need to be, if it was a kind of a singleton class, so for example, sometimes physics or a course like that where it was one teacher offering that one course, then we can do that. But if it's multiple teachers teaching the same and they don't happen to have same credentialing that would allow them to meet Cuesta's qualifications, we've decided that's not a good scenario for us.
So as we look at the, what seems to be the bottom line is Cuesta's requirements, and so I'm just hoping that's going to be something that we can pursue and maybe get some more of the core curriculum in here as well. But I'll just wait to see the report next year, because I'll bet it's great.
Thanks.
Mr. Quesenberry.
So I'm just confirming this information for myself, and that is that these are our teachers employed by our district, and the students can get credit, college credit through Cuesta. And the other question I have is, this doesn't preclude students from enrolling at Quest at, let's say, an evening class that, you know, could be, you know, a survey of American literature or something that they could take there. Is that correct?
Your first question is correct. These are our teachers, our students sitting in the same seats that just get the benefit of credit at both places. The second is no, it has no relation to a student being able to take a course at a community college in addition. Of course, there are requirements, and students have to be careful about having those pre-approved, as they have to have an 80% match.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one then, thank you very much.
Mrs. Rogers?
Yes.
Before we go on.
Oh, yes. I have someone from the public, please.
You need to come to the microphone.
Denise Palermo. I just had a question about where that list of courses are, because I also teach high school kids and wanted to know what courses they where they're listed.
Right, so, and I can answer to respond to it, or so.
I think.
Well, maybe they could.
Yes, I think they can. And,
yeah.
I'm happy to respond. So these courses are specific just to our schools, and so per high school it depends on the qualifications. So this hasn't been approved yet. This is the first reading. So after it's approved, then it's an agreement between Cuesta College and San Luis Coastal, and those could be supplied to anyone.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes, Mr. Unger.
I'm wondering if there's any reason why we couldn't waive the second reading, and if there's no objection from the board, take a vote on this tonight.
Yes, I do believe that Cuesta requested for it to come back a second time.
Thank you.
And that was their request this year.
Okay, then if there's no further comment, thank you, and we'll move on.
Thank you.
Fortunately, I got the easy board policy revision tonight. We receive our CSBA updates each month in terms of board policies, what we need to do. So there was just one change in terms of this budget board policy, and that is switching a date from September to October 8th. And so that is the one date. I actually have one more next month that's going to come to you that has basically the same exact thing, but when they instituted the new law, it basically changed the date to October 8th.
So is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to the date change in this board policy? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back.
I'll make a motion to approve proposed revisions to board policy 3100.
I'd like to second that. I'd just like to ask one quick question.
Surely.
Actually, I'd like to point something out. Within this board policy, not one of the changes, I found it amusing that this statement is in the board policy. Mm-hmm. The board shall establish and maintain a general fund reserve for economic uncertainty that meets or exceeds the requirements of the law. And as the governor keeps hammering on the school districts to live within a reserve cap that would not meet this, glad to see this is still in our board policy. Thanks.
So we have a motion by Mrs. Schaffer, a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously. 10.6, proposed new board policy 3515.7, business and non-instructional operations, firearms on school grounds. This is a second reading.
Thank you. This is bringing this back for a second reading from the last meeting. I had a task to look into to check in with our legal counsel on one aspect of this proposed policy and a request to add some language. So, first of all, it was brought up at the last meeting that the board seemed very interested in making our policy the most restrictive possible. In other words, the law now allows school districts to opt to allow people to carry licensed concealed weapons on school campuses or can opt to not allow that. And in this board's interest, and certainly our insurance carrier's interest, is to be as restrictive as we possibly can. Penal Code 6269 or .9 section L through O has a list of people who could carry a firearm, and it includes the people you would expect, a peace officer, a National Guards person, or something like that. But it also had some curious things like a retired police officer or an armed security guard, and I think it was the board's interest to, why do we need to have those? Could we restrict those further? Our counsel at Lozano Smith highly recommended not doing that, not restricting it more, because the law specifically does call out that these are individuals who could carry a firearm on a school campus, that section really is legal for those, even though it does seem strange to me too. So the advice is to keep it, this is probably as restrictive as we can go. I don't know if this is what the board was interested in, but I added a sentence there that's outlined in red that just basically asks all authorized individuals to check in with the site administration so that we know when a weapon is on campus for any reason whatsoever, unless it's an emergency situation where that would be difficult or impossible to do. With that, this is a second reading. It's not super time sensitive, but I think the quicker we get something in place, the better I think we will be. Available for questions.
Mr. Questenberry.
So my question has to deal with what would be considered checking in, but it could be a phone call. I'm going to be on your campus. Or is there going to be some sort of procedure, maybe in the administrative?
Yeah, typically when we write something like this up and have it authorized, our next step is to either get administrative regulations from some reliable source or create our own. And I think those are the kinds of things we'll talk to our site administrators with and say what works.
Okay.
I think it's probably a physical check-in is probably what we would be looking for. Okay. And there's also because of that penal code L through O that allows certain people, a retired police officer to have a gun on campus, perhaps we'd want to have even something more restrictive, some sort of a form that indicates reasons or something, because I think it seems like it's the board's interest to be as safe as we can in terms of any weapons on our campuses. But we would put that into ARs to answer your question more succinctly.
Seeing no other board members, is there anyone from the public who would like to? Oh, Mr. Buckman, I'm sorry.
No, sorry. I was waiting to come back for the public.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, Mr. Buckman.
Not to make a pun, but I think it was a little quick on the draw. Okay. I'd like to move to the acceptance of the motion of the policy as presented.
So I have a motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously. Item 10.07, don't move, Mr. Robinette.
I won't.
Proposed new board policy 7310, naming of facilities. This is a second reading.
Again, back again with some suggested changes or revised policy based on the last board meeting having to do with the naming of school facilities. The board seemed to have consensus that they were okay with having the ability to have naming rights to some entity, a corporation, an individual, maybe in a situation where a large sum of money was given to the school district in return for a name on a building or something like we see commonly. And so we have a naming rights section in the policy, even though the first paragraph really indicates that we're not in favor in general of recognizing names of people on our buildings. So that option is there for the board. The board also asked that the ability to kind of terminate that agreement not just be specific to unlawful discrimination issues, alcohol, tobacco, but anything else. And so I just changed that last statement just to basically have the contract, because this would be a contractual arrangement. This would be an agreement that would be entered into ahead of time. So whatever we would determine as part of that agreement would be a reason to terminate that agreement, would be part of the contract. I think giving the board broader authority to take off the name of something for various reasons, not just those that were outlined in bullet number 4. So I hope that it's a satisfactory answer to that. But I know the board wasn't unanimous in that whole section of naming rights. So this is, again, not a time-sensitive matter, but this is a second reading.
Okay. Mr. Questenberry.
Well, I in the first paragraph there, I was just wondering if that precludes, if we have some unprecedented growth in the San Luis and Morro Bay area, that will keep us from having a Roger Elementary and a Rogers Middle School. Is that... Sorry for that.
Your point is well taken. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. At the last board meeting, I leaned towards including the naming of the facilities and including the naming rights section. I'm going to say tonight that the more I've thought about it, it's just a door I don't want to open. If there were a science lab that we had named after somebody and we later needed to come along and take down the science lab and there was a lot of community angst about it, then I think it could create a problem for a future board. So just letting the board know that I sort of changed my vote on this whole section on naming rights.
Okay, and seeing no one, Mr. Unger.
I'm going to support this because I think, although I would, my preference again is as is stated in paragraph number 1, that we don't name things after people. I think we need to leave ourselves open to the fact that there may be a time when this could be advantageous. So I'm going to support the policy as written.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Is that a motion?
No.
I can
make that a motion. Okay. I move approval of board policy, proposed board policy 7310.
And I'll second.
Okay, and I have comment. I didn't support this last time, and I'm not supporting it this time for the same reasons. I'm concerned about issues of equity. I think that the likelihood would be that if someone were to... Well, let me change that. I don't want to have and have not schools. And so that has been a board interest for a long time. And so if someone were to gift a large building to one of our comprehensive high schools, I think that could create disparity between the two schools. I also don't think that public education should be for sale. So if Google wanted to come and put a building on one of our school sites and name it the Google Building, then I have concerns that they would then feel that they might have some reason to be involved in curricular decisions. So for those reasons, I can't support this policy. But I have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second, I believe, by Mrs. Sheffer.
No.
Oh, by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Nay.
No.
3.
So that passes 4-3.
If I can just make one more comment, you'll notice, if I see Mr. Palazzo back here, that at the last meeting he was busy texting me while I was standing up here. We did not put in this board policy the ability for a contest to name schools, because unlike Great Britain, we don't want to have a school called School Emix School Face.
That was a research vessel named Bodie McBoatface,
yes.
And they, even though it had four times as many as any other boats, they didn't do it.
Okay, item 10.08, approve the comprehensive school safety plan.
So Chris Dowler is going to talk just about the template for a school safety plan. Just for the board to know, the reason why this is in front of you tonight is CISC has a new requirement that safety plans and the safety plan template be approved by both the school site councils as well as the Board of Education. So all of these plans, though it sounds, it looked at, as I went through the PDF, not all the principals had the actual president sign or they didn't sign it type of thing. We'll make sure that those are completed. But it has been to each school site council, has been approved by the school site councils at all of the sites. So Mr. Dowler is going to talk about those. And again, this by doing this tonight, by the board approving the school site safety plans, we're able to get our safety rebate funds.
Hello. So the comprehensive school safety plan, I've kind of provided you guys, I think, in Friday notes, or maybe it's attached to this document. There's three different levels of safety planning. One is provided by the county for the Diablo Canyon safety plan. The second is an emergency response plan, and that's like a grab-and-go binder that our administrators and leadership team members would use in the case of a real emergency. And then there's a comprehensive school safety plan, which is a document required by Education Code 32282. And much of this document is used by school officials for reflection, for looking at policies as it relates to the comprehensive view of school safety. It's not a practical document. It's a reflective document. Traditionally, this document in our school district was created by school sites, and literally they all looked a little different with varying degrees of compliance with Education Code. So this year, I've actually created a template that is very compliant with Education Code. That ensures that schools have an opportunity to input their own information as it relates to their school site, but it ensures that everybody's working from the same alignment to Education Code. So Education Code requires that schools assess their school crime, which is why you see there's reports about police reports in there, that they have a policy about child abuse reporting, there's a listing of disaster procedures, that there's policy relating to suspension or expulsion, that there's procedures to notify teachers of dangerous pupils or pupils that are suspected of violating Education Code 48900, that we have a discrimination and harassment policy, that we have a school dress code that addresses gang apparel, and then there's procedures for safe ingress and egress of pupils and staff and parents, and that there's a description of how the school creates a safe and orderly environment conducive to learning at the school. So that's more of a narrative section that's going to be individual by each school, and that there's rules and procedures on school discipline, which is more of a policy document. So a lot of the comprehensive safety plan is really just policy. There are some narrative sections that can be filled in by the schools, but what you have is very uniform sort of comprehensive safety plans approved by every school site council this year, and next year we'll look on maybe perhaps expanding a little bit of the document and making sure that everybody's on the same timeline next year.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address this item? Seeing no one, then we'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Sheffer, followed by Mr. Unger.
I am happy to see that, or to know, that our Measure D funds will help ensure some of the physical, the plant safety, facility safety,
yeah.
at our various sites. And I think that will be reassuring and helpful to all. So I just wanted to point that out, that that's a good use of some of our Measure D funds.
Mr. Unger?
Yeah, I have two questions. The first, what's the definition of reports to police? So we talk about arrests and things like that, but then it also speaks to reports to police.
Yeah, there's not really a great detailed
description of that in education code, but what we've chosen to define it as and what most people define it as is if there's a police that have created some sort of reporting document out of their visit to the school or interview with a student, then we'll consider that a police report.
And then the second question is just kind of a quick review of these. It looks like several of them are, they're using the template, but they don't have the school narrative in them. Is all this stuff going to get cleaned up?
Oh yeah, that's part of what needs to happen. Absolutely. I mean, everybody's kind of new to utilizing this template, so there's varying degrees of completion to all of it. But yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. So my thought was, as we're in the budget season, and I didn't see this in the LEAs or the LCAP, Chris, do you have a sense of the emergency equipment that's at the school sites that they might need to respond?
Yeah, Ryan can answer that.
So actually, Steve Stewart has gone around and done kind of a, we started it last year by looking at our overall emergency plans. It's kind of different than this comprehensive safety plan, but really looking at all the sites. We started by meeting at every single school site, looking at where all the shutoffs were for electricity, gas. I mean, we just started there. So they've also went out in all the big tubs. They were old garbage cans, kind of full of supplies. So we've actually taken all of those into BG&T, gone through them all, and actually bought new kits for every single school site. So totally redone those kind of, again, that's more of a catastrophic type of situation.
The last year's budget, we're all new.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I forgot to ask one question that I heard. So speaking of the catastrophic needs for students, do we have special supplies for our special education students who maybe are stuck on campus for a day or two? You know, they have specific needs, and so do we have extra special stuff for them at each school site, especially sites that have the special day classes like William Walter's class? If not, I would strongly suggest it.
Yeah, I don't know that we've done a detailed analysis of that, but I know that in general, those programs will have oftentimes medication storage at their school sites. So it's not something that's delivered on a daily basis, but I couldn't answer your exact question.
I would suggest that's something that the district may want to look into because it
Absolutely.
Could be critical for the special education students.
Sure.
Mr. Questenberry.
So if we choose not to approve these tonight, would they be further developed or complete
by the
next board meeting?
Could be. If you'd like us to, absolutely.
Well, I'm just, okay.
Sure.
All right.
The only dilemma, so far, what they have so far has been approved by the school site council. So I would say that if we're going to make changes to them, we'll probably have to have them hold another school site council meeting to approve it. So and that would be very difficult to have by the end of the year, school year, I should say.
And is there a timeline with CISC on getting these?
I want to say it was mid-June to have the approval.
Okay. So what do we think? It doesn't sound like we can get site councils back in.
It would be difficult to do.
And meet the CISC deadline. Mrs. Shepherd.
We could still make changes, have them put the narrative to any pieces that, and bring that aspect of it still to the board for approval.
You know, I seem to recall that last year there were a few of these housekeeping issues that needed to be taken care of as well. The last time we saw these, I can remember having a similar conversation about some of them weren't signed, and there were some questions. And I would propose, based upon the instructions we've given to staff, that we go ahead and approve this tonight, because it's very important that we comply with CISC requirements and know that staff will do the job that needs to be done.
I think we should bring these revised, revamped, make sure that they're correct in the fall back to the board
yes.
as well.
So because of the timeline.
Really should be a beginning of the year type of thing where they should be looking at this, getting their information,
right.
should be tying into their overall emergency plans, those types of things.
So due to the timeline we have with our insurers' requirements, I would go ahead and move approval of the comprehensive school safety plan at this time.
I'll second that.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Buckman to approve the safety plans as they are now, with the understanding that they'll be fully complete and presented again in the fall.
Absolutely.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 7-0.
Thank you.
Okay, we're moving into some bid awards. Item 10.9 is award of bid number 266, abatement and demolition of San Luis High School annex building and demolition and removal of various tanks at Morro Bay High School.
So as we discussed at our last meeting with the board in terms of bids, we have two bids tonight that have that 10% potential allocation for changes. So in the two projects in front of you, the first one that we'll discuss is the abatement and demolition of the annex building at San Luis Obispo High School. That is going to pave the way for a new 12 classroom building in its place. But we hope to start that kind of a mid-year project, but there's no way to really do a demolition abatement of a building while kids are still in session. So we really wanted to get this accomplished during the summertime when kids weren't going to be around. And so hopefully it's a little bit clearer in terms of how we laid that out on the chart in terms of what the 10% means. Again, the 10% is only if there's some unforeseen circumstances that come up during the demolition. Now, at the same time that we were doing some demolition, we were doing some abatement at Slo High, we also had some abatement issues at Morro Bay High School. So there's some old tanks. And those of you who were at Morro Bay High, you know, the big tank with the tennis ball on one end, I know everyone's going to miss it. But there are some of those old tanks that were used with the boiler system and things like that that are just sitting there. And so why not have the contractor who's going to be here for the abatement for the demolition to Slo High also do that abatement at Morro Bay High School? And so both of those projects, you'll see the two prices there. Again, the 10% allowance is only if there's some unforeseen circumstances that come up during the construction. And so what I'm bringing the board forward today is that Vernon Edwards Construction out of Santa Maria had the lowest bid for the demolition and abatement and asking for board approval.
Go to public.
It should be noted that there is no longer a member of the public present that is not district staff. So I'll cease going to the public, but should a member of the public arrive, I'll be sure to begin going again. Mr. Questenberry.
I'll move approval of item 10.09 and for the award of bid 266 for the abatement and demolition of San Luis High Annex Building and the demolition and removal of various tanks at Morro Bay High School.
Okay, and I will second that with the understanding that there is a large spread in these bids, mm-hmm. From $237,000 to $502,000, and that probably speaks to how much people want the work. And it's noted here that these bids have been reviewed for complete documentation and bonding requirements, and so they are considered responsible bids. And on that basis, I'll second it. So we have a motion by Mr. Questenberry, a second by myself. All in favor of this bid award?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0.
So the next bid award, and again we have several just to go through, and that was for the temporary housing at San Luis Obispo High School, setting up as we demolish the annex building. We're going to need a new cafeteria space for kids. We're going to need some temporary classrooms as we move forward with the kind of the phasing of the different projects. So we're going to start that temporary house phasing at San Luis Obispo High School. And one of the portables we're going to be using is actually a current portable at C.L. Smith that's going to come over for temporary housing. And C.L. Smith is going to receive a portable in its place with a restroom facility, which is needed for their expanding kindergarten and TK program at C.L. Smith, as well as some of their special education programs on that side of campus. So this is just one portable that's going into his place. And so, the Vernon Edwards was the low bid on this project out of Santa Maria. And this, because of the temporary housing, because of some of those things, again, this was another project that was something where we went ahead and put the 10% potential need for changes as we move forward. And asking the board to approve Vernon Edwards as the low bid for this particular project.
Mrs. Sheffer,
I
forgot
me.
Your name. That's horrible. I apologize.
I have a sign.
I was going to call you by your first name when appropriate.
Which is perfectly acceptable. I would move approval of bid number 267, item number, agenda item 1010, Measure D award for C.L. Smith Kindergarten Relocatable and San Luis Temporary Housing.
And I'll second. So we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by myself. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0.
So the next three bids are actually a little bit more simpler in nature, don't have the 10% allocation for changes in them. This next one is C.L. Smith. And so what we're looking at C.L. Smith is doing a complete campus paint job of the campus, in desperate need of kind of a facelift on that campus. And we're also looking at taking the kind of wood siding that's around some of the buildings at C.L. Smith and making those stucco to match some of the newer buildings on campus. So that'll be kind of going together. Not going to be doing that on the main office building yet, because that's a building that we're going to be doing renovation on in the future in terms of the entire campus, or entire building, I should say. We're also looking at doing Teach Elementary School. You know, through growth, we've moved Teach Elementary School over to that, the old Pacheco Grand Avenue campus there. And so we're going to be looking at also painting that campus, which is in desperate need as well. And so, as you can see, there's, again, a wide variance for us. As the board will notice, the more bids we receive, oftentimes the better price we receive in terms of bids. And so this was a heavily bid, and the low bid was Piani Construction. We did have a bid protest from actually a subcontractor for this project. In terms of the list, a subcontractor can't really protest the bid, but we went ahead and got the information from the low bidder to share with the subcontractor anyways, even though we didn't have to, and just wanted to make sure they had the correct ability to be able to do that stucco work, plaster work at C.L. Smith. So I just wanted to let the board know that. And so we're asking the board to award to Piani Construction for the painting projects at both C.L. Smith and Teach Elementary School.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
I move approval of the award of bid number 268.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 7-0.
Okay, the next bid was for actually the sewer line at Morrow Elementary, one of our leased sites, as well as we have our parent participation program on that school site currently. And so the sewer line there is beyond repair, really needs a lot of work. And so that's part of this project, as well as the water line specifically going into Del Mar Elementary School. So they have a lot of rust corrosion currently in terms of the classrooms. And this is hopefully going to be the fix to kind of cure that. And so both of those are part of this particular project. We actually, though only one bid in this project, it was right at our expected budget for this project. And so fortunately for us, I think the first project they bid on, there was a lot of people there, and hopefully they thought there was going to be a lot of people again on this project, and we got a good bid.
I'd like to move approval of bid number 269.
Second.
So we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mr. Questenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes 7-0.
And Arbor Construction is also the company that low bid the tennis court project at both schools, and that is a local contractor in the San Luis Obispo area. The last bid is for the slurry ceiling at Teach and Sunnyside Elementary School. Again, projects that are beyond repair in terms of those campuses, and really trying to, you know, we have a whole asphalt plan for the district for every single site, priority order that we're going through. And so we have a lot of groups that utilize Sunnyside Elementary School, as well as our parent participation program, some of our preschool programs, Head Start, so on. And so RDZ Contractors was out of Napomo, was the low bid, actually using, I believe it's Apodaca Paving as their subcontractor, which is also a local company. So RDZ Contractors was the low bid for this project.
I'll move approval of bid number 270.
I'll second.
So a motion by myself, a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously.
It's going to be a busy summer.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. So we'll move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. Item 11.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. I'm sorry, did I hear something?
Yes, please.
Okay. 11.02, disposition of surplus property. 11.03, acceptance of donations. 11.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 11.05, approval of purchase orders. 11.06, SELPA Community Advisory Committee appointment. Okay. So I'll entertain a motion for 11.02 through 11.05.
Move approval of 11.02 through 11.05.
I'll second that.
Okay. Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Questenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Mr. Unger?
Yeah, I just, there's a couple of things on the certificated and classified personnel I mean, that I'd like to talk about. The first is that we're offering a new contract, and I believe the name is, I checked with Mrs. Newland, and I believe it should be Tyler Hoyt, who's being offered a job at Laguna next year. And I just want to say Tyler's a local Los Osos kid, great, just a really stellar guy, Eagle Scout, and I really want to wish him the best in employment in our district. And then the other thing I wanted to do is just recognize Patty Downing, who is a longtime teacher, longtime County Office of Education teacher, longtime teacher for us, and I want to wish her the best on her retirement. With that, I'd move approval of item 11.01.
Okay, and I will second. So, motion by Mr. Unger, second by myself. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously. 11.06, Mr. Millar.
Yes, I'd just like to acknowledge that we're reappointing Aaron
Brisky.
Thank you. I thought that was him. For another 2-year term, I don't think we should just go walk past appointments like that when somebody's willing to put in 2 years of service in addition to the service that has already been provided. So thank you for that. And I'll move approval of 11.06.
Second.
Okay, so I have a motion from Mr. Millar, second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Advance agenda. Does anyone have an item for the advance agenda?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Rogers. I was reading, and we were doing some discussion on the counseling within the district, and I remembered that we had had wonderful grand openings for the two district family resource centers, and I was wondering if I get support or an update from staff on how that use is going, how many people that's serving, and just a general update on how things are going with the family resource centers.
Did you want that as an agenda item or Friday packet?
I'm fine with it either way. I think Friday packet probably is the cleanest way to do it.
Mr. Questmer?
I'd support that as a Friday packet.
Mr. Unger? Okay. the administration has taken direction then to provide that information in Friday packet. And Mr. Unger?
Yeah, I was intrigued by the public comment that we received tonight from Mrs. Palermo Blakely, and I'd be curious, and I'd be happy with this in a Friday packet, to know how letters are issued to the different groups, different students, individual students. Thank you.
Okay, directions received. Let's see. Reports by board members. Mr. Unger.
Well, I went to the Morro Bay High School Cinco de Mayo Festival, and it was really fun. It was actually a fundraiser for the scholarship program. And so, really, I think there are a lot of people involved in it, a lot of families involved in it. And Chris Jones, who is one of the vice principals at Morro Bay High School, really took the lead, and I'd like to just publicly thank Chris Jones for that and the outreach that he's made toward the Latino community. I was able to go to the FHA fashion show that we talked about, and I will just tell you it was really, really fun. The students were great, and there were actually teachers involved, too, strutting down the runway. I mentioned Bella Stenvall and the Big Brothers and Big Sisters, and she really spoke from the heart and about some very personal experiences that drove her to being a big sister, and it was again quite touching. And then Mr. Buckman and I were at CSBA this weekend, and then today I went to an Ed Coalition meeting where we spent a lot of time talking about the reauthorization of what was Proposition 30, and so that should be on the ballot in November.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Questenberry, then Mr. Buckman.
Well, I had the opportunity to actually teach a portion of Catherine Kirby's class, fourth graders. We worked on some haiku, and I think the our goal of having students have a device that they can. This is a picture of the entire fourth grade class, most of whom are holding up their, I think it's their Chromebooks, with their haikus written on them. So I thought that would be kind of fun. And it was a lot of fun. The kids were very enthusiastic. Mrs. Kirby is a past master of teaching. I learned a few things with her help, so that was really fun. And the other thing is I had a chance to go to Pacific Beach, and Andy Marinello brought two young women who were interested in maybe going there, and Mr. Marinello was wonderful. He assured their parents that Pacific Beach was a wonderful school, and it is. And then I departed, and he proceeded to take them on a tour of the school, and I've got some very positive feedback from the two young ladies. So I was really happy that I can participate in that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
Yes, thank you. I was lucky to go and represent the county and the district at the California School Boards Association Delegate Assembly. We did breakout groups on the LCAP and the number of pages and how difficult it was and what we could do to work on that. And then immediately rolled into the Tri-County Education Coalition. And I will be giving a written report so that everybody knows the value of what we get at Tri-County Ed. But we had speakers from ACSA, CSEA, CASBO, PTA, AFT, CTA, talked to us about the May revision, and then went and visited our local legislators with a common message that was from based on the membership, which is administrators, teaching, classified, PTA, community, and other organizations in education. So we're able to speak for one voice, and it's quite an experience. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Sheffer.
She was first.
I just wanted to say that I attended the District Riding Awards last week, and it was very fun. And one of my favorite parts was that several of the kids had the opportunity to read their work from kindergarten to high school, and they were so excited to be there and did a very lovely job. There were a lot of people there. I was happy to see so many people in the audience and so many kids being very proud of their work. So.
And then I'd just like to remind everybody that I believe it was in today's Tribune in the This Day in History, that today was the anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education decision.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that neither Mr. Buckman or I mentioned was, as part of CSBA's delegate assembly, we got to hear from Sylvia Mendez, who was the daughter of the plaintiff in Mendez versus Westminster. Mendez versus Westminster was really it was a decision that set the stage for desegregation throughout the United States. It happened in California about 7 years before the Brown versus Board of Education decision. Mexican American children were not allowed to go to school in Orange County in so-called white schools. They were discriminated against. This decision, when I say it really set the stage. Thurgood Marshall was involved in it. The governor in California at the time was Earl Warren, so it really was a historic thing. And this year is the 70th anniversary of Mendez versus Westminster.
Thank you. If there's nothing else, then this meeting is adjourned.